This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday. We got all kinds of stuff this hour. I will get to some emails later on. We have Joel Pollack coming up about a half hour from now. He actually wrote a book about what does Trump need to do in the first 100 days if he's to do some good out there. And I want to ask him, what's in it? I actually haven't read it, but I'm fascinated by the concept. And I know Joel's a sharp guy, so we'll talk about that. Before we get to any of those things, though, you know what time it is. Well, maybe you don't, but because we normally do this on Monday. But every Monday at this time, even though it's Tuesday, every Monday at this time, start of the second hour, we do Medal of Honor Monday. All we do is take a Medal of Honor citation and read it. These men and their deeds deserve to be remembered. You can and should do this in your own life. Maybe it's just with your kids, your class, your Sunday school class, the team you coach. You can do this with anybody. They're fascinating stories. Kids love them, boys and girls. We remember our heroes, and that's another small way. Speaking of creating culture, you know that's a way of creating culture, promoting culture. Hey, look at this brave man. Look at what he did. They know instinctively, well, that's what I'm supposed to be. And because I was gone yesterday, thanks to that stupid hurricane shutting down the roads, I thought maybe I should do a little extended version of this one. And so we are going to do a little extended version, so don't get too excited. A little one. She said, Jesse, on Independence Day, I attended a flag-raising ceremony in Huntington Beach, California, hosted by hardcore anti-communists. Many elderly veterans were in attendance, decked out in their former uniforms, and I had the pleasure of having a long conversation with a Vietnam vet. I won't say his name, but as I do my research, I find he is very well known and has even caught the eye of President Trump. This veteran took part in the Battle of Ya Drang. Could you give us any history of that battle? Her name is Karen. You should know, I don't know which episode it is. I'm sure Chris will go looking at this point in time. I've done an extended history of the Battle of Ya Drang before. So if you're looking for something with more depth in it, Chris will dig up the episode and I'll give it to you and you can go dig into it. But I'm actually going to do a couple Medal of Honors from this one because there were a couple. Before I get to those, though, I will do it. Like, we'll do a few minutes. Let's do a little bit of history of what's going on here. You've probably heard of the Battle of Ya Drang. If you haven't, you've heard of the movie or seen the movie We Were Soldiers, haven't you? It's a Mel Gibson Vietnam movie. At least you've seen the cover of it in Blockbuster, even though I know those don't exist anymore. Well, that movie, We Were Soldiers, was based off of a book. We Were Soldiers. I believe the book's title was We Were Soldiers Once and Young, and they just shortened that to We Were Soldiers as the name of the movie. But it's a book, and of course the book is written about the true story of the first major battle, and one of the only major battles of Vietnam. When I say one of the only, there weren't that many huge set piece battles in Vietnam between a large American force and a large Vietnamese force. It's just not a war that was fought in that way. A small engagement, you know, your platoon of 20 gets ambushed by a platoon of 20. Trust me, it feels plenty big when you're part of the 20. Just to clarify. But I'm talking about large numbers of forces opposing each other. Very, very rare in Vietnam. And this battle was actually part of the reason for that. So just brief history on it. We have always had cavalry, horseback. General Custer, cavalry. Horses are wonderful before the motorized era because they can get you where you want to go with more weight and faster than you could on foot. That's the idea. Get to where you want to be faster than the enemy can get there. Wrong foot the enemy, and you bring more things to bear than he does. You show up with 10 mortar rounds. He shows up with 2. You have a distinct advantage. You see, you get how it goes. So let's fast forward to the helos, helicopters. I'm going to call them helos to make this easy. They were Hueys, but I'm just going to call them helos to make it easy for everybody right now. We started to experiment pre-Vietnam with using helicopters for this purpose, where it had normally been horses and tanks, and we still have cavalry tanks and things, but what about the concept of air cavalry, air cav? It's a fascinating concept. Yet, can we move mass quantities of men and materials from point A to point B and then resupply them and help them using helicopters and artillery fired remotely? Can we do that? And we began training on that. All right, we'll fast forward to all the other stuff. If you, like I said, if you want more in depth, you can go dig it up. I'm sure Chris will find the episode at some point in time. Is that the episode? Did you get that one right, Chris? What's the date? You said you think. Chris, I think and I know are two very different things. I have to have this conversation with my kid all the time. Whatever. Chris thinks it's Lessons from History, Operation Rolling Thunder. That's what Chris says it is, and that does sound right. Anyway, so we get to Vietnam, and at that point in time, this is 64, 65, the North Vietnamese really had control of South Vietnam. And they were doing so many things in South Vietnam because they had these bases in what were known as the Central Highlands of Vietnam. So you're looking at Vietnam, about the center, there's mountains. I'm just going to call them mountains. There are jungle mountains there. And they were wonderful staging areas for troops. I was actually talking to my sons this morning. Hey, Dad, my oldest said, hey, Dad, if the Russians invade, what's the best place to be? And so, of course, because I'm a nerd, I said, the Russians can't invade, son. He said, I'm talking hypotheticals. A big army invades. Well, the mountains are always where you want to be. You don't want to be on the coast. The mountains are where you want to be. Mountains are natural fortifications, natural hiding places, natural everything. The Vietnamese were doing a bunch of staging and fighting from the Central Highlands. We Americans decided that's where we would try to launch our first ever air cav offense. So we launched a bunch of guys there. The mission had all sorts of problems. We didn't have enough helos. We had to take our guys in stages. We were too far from the base. Look, we were learning, right? We were learning how to do this. But we land our guys there. I'm going to simplify some numbers to make it easy for everyone to understand. We land about 1,000 guys there. There were some South Vietnamese troops. We land 1,000 guys there, and we kind of stumble upon more than double that number Vietnamese. They were there waiting for us, and they begin attacking us. And this takes place over the course of 3 days. But if you've seen the movie, you have a really great understanding of what it was like. The Vietnamese understood the power of America's bombs, American artillery. And very early on, remember, these are crafty fighters. These are wonderful fighters. You can hate them all you want. They just got done running the French out of their country. These were people who knew how to fight. They knew that they had to get close to us in proximity. That way you can't fire artillery. If I'm fighting you with a knife, I can't call artillery in on you now, can I? So that was the idea. They formed up en masse and started coming at our guys as fast as humanly possible. And we were calling in airstrikes, calling in artillery, and the helos were flying in and out, and our guys were going down, and their guys were going down. And it was nasty, hand-to-hand fighting, bayonets, clubbing people to death, artillery, people are being burned alive. It is a brutal, brutal affair that takes place over the course of 3 days. At one point, the Americans were almost overrun, and they had to do what is very, very rare and call in broken arrow. If you ever hear that term, broken arrow means when you call that in, you are about to be overrun, and everyone's about to die. And so every air unit in the vicinity, no matter where they're at, they drop whatever mission they're on, and every air unit is immediately rerouted to your area to help you because we are all about to die. That's what Broken Arrow means. Again, if you've read the book or seen the movie, it's a wonderful movie. If you've seen the movie, you will actually hear that Broken Arrow, Broken Arrow, Broken Arrow means it's all gone bad and we're about to be overwhelmed, help. So it was a very touch-and-go affair. At the end of that affair, we claimed victory because we killed more of them than they killed of us. They actually claimed victory as well. It was said afterwards that that battle, they didn't beat us, but because they, in ways, they held their own, it is said that that was the battle that told Ho Chi Minh he could win against us. So we treat it as a victory, and I treat it as a victory. I feel like we won that, but so did they, and that's kind of how it goes. Now, I said all that to do not one, but two Medal of Honor citations from the Battle of Yadrang, and then we'll go back and talk some politics. Sound good? I did that in about 10 minutes, Chris. How about that? You couldn't do that. What, Chris? Hey, look, Chris, I didn't mean to be mean. I'm about to talk about the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, so we should come together right now. What, Chris? This is a time for us to come together. Anyway, we'll set aside Jewish producer Chris for a moment and let's discuss something serious. What's going on over there is very, very serious. I'm sure you saw the news from today. The Gaza pier that we spent $300 million on is now gone. Gone. Did nothing. And look, people are dying. Every day, sirens, rockets attacks, Hezbollah in the north, Hamas in the south, fires. The fire risk is horrible. We have homeless Holocaust survivors right now in Israel. Did you know that? Imagine surviving the Holocaust and in your final years, you're friggin' homeless because of some horrible war. Well, the IFCJ, what they have is a petition right now. They just want Americans to sign the petition so they can go turn it in over there and say, look at how many people are praying for you and standing with you. Would you mind signing that for me? Support IFCJ.org. It's just a petition. Support IFCJ.org. We'll be back.
I've got an animal inside of me.
This is Jesse Kelly. You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is The Jesse Kelly Show. About to finish up Medal of Honor Tuesday because I wasn't here on Monday. Don't forget, we have Joel Pollack coming up about 10 minutes from now. He wrote a book about Trump's first 100 days if he wins election again. What can he do? He said he's got a bunch of stuff in there. Let's talk to him about that. But I just did a little history on the Vietnamese Battle of Yadrang. And now for Medal of Honor Monday, we have two different Medal of Honor citations. Without further ado, let's get to the first one.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
Major Bruce Crandall distinguished himself by extraordinary heroism as flight commander in the Republic of Vietnam while serving with Company A, 229th Assault Helicopter Battalion, 1st Cavalry Division, on the 14th of November 1965. His flight of 16 helicopters was lifting troops for a search and destroy mission from Play Me Vietnam to Landing Zone X-Ray in the Yadrang Valley. On the 4th troop lift, the enemy had Landing Zone X-Ray targeted. As Major Crandall and the first 8 helicopters landed to discharge troops on his 5th troop lift, his unarmed helicopter came under such intense enemy fire that the ground commander ordered the second flight of 8 aircraft to abort their mission. As Major Crandall flew back to Play Me, his base of operations, he determined that the ground commander of the besieged infantry battalion desperately needed more ammunition. Major Crandall then decided to adjust his base of operations to artillery firebase Falcon in order to shorten the flight distance to deliver ammunition and evacuate wounded soldiers. While medical evacuation was not his mission, he immediately sought volunteers and, with complete disregard for his own personal safety, led the 2 aircraft to Landing Zone X-Ray. Despite the fact that the landing zone was still under relentless enemy fire, Major Crandall landed and proceeded to supervise the loading of seriously wounded soldiers aboard the aircraft. Major Crandall's voluntary decision to land under the most extreme fire instilled in the other pilots the will and spirit to continue to land their own aircraft, and in the ground forces the realization that they would be resupplied and that friendly wounded would be promptly evacuated. This greatly enhanced morale and the will to fight at a critical time. After his first medical evacuation, Major Crandall continued to fly into and out of the landing zone throughout the day and into the evening. That day, he completed a total of 22 flights, most under intense enemy fire, retiring from the battlefield only after all possible service had been rendered to the infantry battalion. His actions provided critical resupply of ammunition and evacuation of the wounded. Major Crandall's daring acts of bravery and courage in the face of overwhelming and determined enemy are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself, his unit, and the United States Army. That's the first. Here's the second.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
This is for a Walter Joseph Marm Jr. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty as a platoon leader in the 1st Cavalry Division, 1st Lieutenant Marm demonstrated indomitable courage during a combat operation. His company was moving through the valley to relieve a friendly unit surrounded by an enemy force of an estimated regimental size. 1st Lieutenant Marm led his platoon through withering fire until they were finally forced to take cover. Realizing that his platoon could not hold very long and seeing four enemy soldiers moving into his position, he moved quickly under heavy fire and annihilated all four. Then, seeing his platoon was receiving intense fire from a concealed machine gun, he deliberately exposed himself to draw its fire. Thus locating the position, he attempted to destroy it with an anti-tank weapon. Although he inflicted casualties, the weapon did not silence the enemy fire. Quickly disregarding the intense fire directed on him and his platoon, he charged 30 meters across open ground and hurled grenades into the enemy position, killing some of the eight insurgents manning it. Although severely wounded when his grenades were expended, armed with only a rifle, he continued the momentum of his assault on the position and killed the remainder of the enemy. First Lieutenant Marm's selfless actions reduced the fire on his platoon, broke the enemy assault, and rallied his unit to continue toward the accomplishment of this mission. First Lieutenant Marm's gallantry on the battlefield and his extraordinary intrepidity at the risk of his life are in the highest traditions of the U.S. Army and reflect great credit upon himself and the armed forces of his country. We brought a little Hilo version of that. In a little on-the-ground version of that. But remember, Vietnam veterans deserve your respect. I actually had a chance this weekend to break bread with a guy who led an infantry platoon in Vietnam, a Marine. My boys, 13 and 15, to them, it was like meeting a rock star. They were floored. They were floored to talk to him. That's why you talk about these things in front of your kids. They're listening, and they're learning what we value and should value. Remember that, all right? You know what I value? My MyPillow. And more specifically, my MyPillow sandals. MyPillow sandals are hurricane certified. No, that's not an official certification. I just gave them hurricane certification because yesterday I was outside trying to make sure my fence didn't blow over and there was things blowing all over the place and I was having to run around the yard and make sure it wasn't flooded out. And you know what I was wearing the entire time? My wife was making fun of me. My MyPillow sandals. They're indoor-outdoor. They're indoor-outdoor and they provided the comfort I needed in the midst of God's wrath here in Houston. And you can have a pair of MyPillow sandals for $25. The premium MyPillow with the Giza fabric on it, $25. It's the $25 extravaganza sale at MyPillow. Go take advantage of it when they have a list of things. It's not one or two things. When there's a list of things on sale for $25, you dive on that thing like you can't wait. Because if you do wait, They're going to run out of your stuff. They're already running out of sandal sizes everywhere. MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener special square. Use the promo code Jesse. We'll call them 800-845-0544. Jewel Pollock has a plan for Trump's first 100 days. Next.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. All right, it's time to talk to Joel about something. Joel Pollack, he has a show. You probably already know who he is, obviously. He hosts Breitbart News on SiriusXM Patriot. And he also has a book out right now that I find the concept in it fascinating and so important. The book's called The Agenda, What Trump Should Do in His First 100 Days. You know, we're all celebrating right now. I shouldn't say all of us, but a bunch of people are celebrating right now. Woohoo, Joe Biden's going down. But what do we do with the power if we get it again? Joining me now, Joel Pollack. Okay, Joel, you wrote the book. I didn't write the book. Trump has 100 days. He just took the Oval Office. What should he do?
Well, thanks, Jesse. And let me tell you, the important thing to know is that Joe Biden can still take this thing. Mm-hmm. The Democrats don't lose easily, right? They fight dirty and they play to win. And the only thing that's important to them is power. So even though it's looking bad for Joe Biden right now, you can be sure that the Democrats are going to pull together every possible resource, every Soros billionaire, every vote-by-mail scheme they can possibly think of, every fake news outlet they create to spam social media with headlines about how terrible the Republicans are. You can be sure they're going to pull out all the stops because power is everything to them. So I actually think Donald Trump is still the underdog in this race. Even if Joe Biden is flailing around right now, the Democrats are going to come up with a solution and they have the time to do it. They're also not averse to breaking rules. Remember in 2008, Hillary Clinton actually had more delegates than Barack Obama, and there was a snafu with Michigan and Florida who broke the rules of the Democratic primary. And so the Democratic National Committee just decided to give the delegates to Obama. They had a meeting and they gave the delegates to Obama so that he could win. And that's how they roll. That is how the Democrats work. So with that in mind, I sat down to write the agenda starting in late May, just after Donald Trump was convicted in Manhattan in that ridiculous Stalinist trial by the Soros-funded prosecutor. And I was so upset. My flag is still flying upside down on my house. I do believe the country is in a state of distress. We are at risk of becoming a banana republic. But rather than wallow in misery and sad feelings and anger, I decided to look ahead to January 20th, 2025, and let's presume that Donald Trump is the president of the United States. What does he do to fix this country? What does he do to make these things right? And I came up with over 200 executive orders and actions that he can implement on day one, as soon as he takes the oath of office. And he can do these things without having to wait for Congress, without having to trust the Democrats. You know, he may need some Democratic votes in the Senate if he has to get through a filibuster or if they control the House somehow after this Biden debacle. And he doesn't have to count on the Republicans. Remember how the Republicans let him down when he was trying to repeal and replace Obamacare back in 2017. So these are things he can do himself without stretching the boundaries of executive power, without violating the Constitution. Within his existing powers as president, these are the things Donald Trump can do, from the border to the economy to inflation to the debt to foreign policy to crime to faith, everything.
Joel, again, we're speaking with Joel Pollack. He wrote a book, The Agenda, kind of laying out a good idea of some things Trump can do. I want to actually focus on a couple of those things, if you don't mind, Joel. Inflation. Like, it's one thing to campaign on, I'll take care of inflation. But anyone who understands monetary policy and how these things work at all knows it's a lot more complicated than that. How can he get in there and stop the spending, the printing, the incentive? What can he do if he even wants to do it?
So he certainly wants to do it. And you're right that Donald Trump doesn't control the interest rates. The Federal Reserve does. And he doesn't control the purse strings. Congress does. But he does control certain things about how money is spent. He can't decide not to spend money Congress has allocated. But, for example, this idea that Joe Biden has of forgiving student loans, forgiving this, forgiving that, he can end that on day one. And those programs that Biden has implemented actually increase inflation because they increase the amount of discretionary income that some people who should be paying their loans currently have. So he can do that. He can also start looking at other fiscal options that the Treasury can consider for different ways, for example, to introduce cryptocurrency into the market that can handle some of the debt burden without increasing inflation. So there are all kinds of things that the federal government can do to help fight inflation. And they're all doable, again, with the executive pen, the pen and the phone, as Barack Obama used to say. He doesn't have to wait for Congress. By the way, the Federal Reserve is not entirely politically independent. And if you think Jerome Powell's done a bad job, and I think some of his decisions have been very questionable, well, that's something Donald Trump can do as well. He can refuse to renew the term of Jerome Powell when it comes up, and he can already start looking for a new head of the Federal Reserve, someone who's going to fight inflation without slowing the economy. So I think there are so many things the president can do within his constitutional powers, and I've given you just a few, but I lay out many more of them in The Agenda.
Steve Bannon wrote the foreword for this book before he was sent off to jail by the communists who run this country. How'd that come about? What's this all about?
Well, Steve has a publishing imprint called War Room, and they actually picked up the book. It's very interesting. It's coming out through Skyhorse Publishing, but Steve Bannon's War Room books is actually putting it out. And I didn't approach Steve. Steve wanted to write the foreword, and it is, in fact, the last thing that Steve Bannon wrote before he left to report to prison in Connecticut. The foreword came through on Sunday night, and he reported to prison on Monday morning. That's how important this was for Steve Bannon to do, and I really appreciate that. I'm very grateful to him for doing that, but Steve is like that. Steve likes looking ahead. Steve does not like wallowing in the past. He doesn't like looking at how desperate our situation is right now, how difficult things are now. He's a Navy guy, and he always wants to know where we're going, where we're navigating to, what's the next step. And that's the frame of mind that I am in right now. I think this book is really uplifting to people. A lot of the people who have read it have told me how much they've enjoyed it simply because it takes you out of the present-day politics, who's up, who polls say, and it gets you into January 2025. What does the next administration do? Remember that if Donald Trump wins the presidency, he will be considered a lame duck because can't run for re-election. So the pundits and the Democrats will already be talking about who the next president is going to be. They're not going to want to let him govern. So he has to act right away. Also, that all of these left-wing groups, these lawfare groups, they're going to sue and challenge every executive order he does. So you have to overwhelm them. And that's why I have well over 200 of these ideas in the book that he can just implement on day one and overwhelm the opposition.
He is Joel Pollack. His book is The Agenda. Highly encourage you to go order this thing. I'm very, very fascinated with the concept. Totally in agreement that this has to be fast, that it has to be vicious. Joel, I appreciate you very much, my friend. Please come back soon. Thank you. Look, it all depends what kind of mentality Trump is going to have walking into a second term in the White House. And no one knows what that's going to be. I don't know. You don't know. Please don't email me and tell me you do know. Because what will happen is the people who hate Trump will email in and say, he has no intention of doing anything. And the people who worship Trump will be, he already said he's going to do it all and save the country. Nobody actually knows. Is he walking in there like the sword of God to clean house, clean things up, and try the best he can to defeat the communists? I don't know. Is he walking in there trying to be just normal guy? The way he looks at it, I got 4 years to get the New York Times to accept me and then I'll ride off into the sunset. I don't know. No one knows. But I like that people are already being forward thinking about what the plan is. I like it a lot. I like that we have a plan. That's why I wanted to have Joel on and talk about it. All right. We have so much more. Get to some emails. Before we get to the emails, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. I can read your mind. You're sitting there thinking, Jesse, are you in pain right now? And the answer is no. And you know why I'm not in pain? It's because I take Relief Factor every single day. You see, now, apparently, once you hit 42, if you drive somewhere or fly somewhere, you will get there and your knee will hurt. Unless, of course, you're taking Relief Factor. So I've had to start taking Relief Factor every day now. Remember, Relief Factor, it's natural. It's drug-free. And it helps support your body's natural response to inflammation. Call them. Here's all you need to do. Take it for 3 weeks. If your pain is gone, neck, back, muscle, whatever it is, if it's gone, keep taking it. Call 1-800-4-RELIEF or go to relieffactor.com. We'll be back.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. If you want to email me, you can. What an honor for you, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So I probably should clarify before I get to the emails how I ended up in Florida, because we were planning on just staying home over Independence Day weekend. And then we decided, hey, let's take a trip to Florida. I'm just going to shoot you straight here. I really, really, really love Florida. And I found myself going to Florida as often as possible. Whenever we get a moment, we start going over to Florida. We're going to various parts of Florida. Shout out, I should note, to Florida Man Radio, WFLA. I love you. Anyway, but I love Florida. And we decided, hey, let's go somewhere for Independence Day. So on a whim, we found some cheap tickets, got a couple hotel rooms. We fly over to Florida. It was fun. The fireworks were amazing. We almost didn't get back to Houston because, of course, a hurricane goes rolling into town. But that's where I was. Florida, had a blast. The oldest son got a little sunburnt. You see, when we told him to put on sunscreen, I guess he took that as a suggestion. Either way, it was a great trip. Not so much for the wife. Now, you remember the Mexico story I told you, the Mexican trip? Just a brief recap for those who weren't here for that little saga. A few years back, 5 years back or so, we found a deal. Gosh, I sound like Chris. We found a deal at a Mexican resort, and we had never really done Cancun. And we decided, I think it was 3 days. We couldn't afford a week. We had 3 days. We wanted to go down to Cancun. So we go down to Cancun. We go to this resort. Everyone gets food poisoning at one point in time. Everyone gets sick. And finally, on the last day we have there, we're all healthy enough. So my wife and I decide we're going to get a couple's massage at the resort. We dropped the kids off at some kids' playland area. They had pizza and laser tag and all kinds of crap for the kids. We're walking out of the kids' area. My wife blows out her ankle. Misses a step, blows out her ankle. They had a wheelchair in. That night, we go bowling. My wife's on crutches. She trips and blows out her other ankle. Okay, so this is the kind of vacation luck this woman has. We go down to Florida, 4th of July, Independence Day. We go do the fireworks that night. We also ate, we grabbed a quick bite at this little bar and grill in the restaurant. I, of course, got a cheeseburger, the basics, but she got the salmon. Don't get me started on you weird fish people again. I don't want to start, but she got the salmon, and it's healthier. About midnight that night, sick as a dog. Food poisoning, as bad as I've ever seen. Not me, her. I was totally fine. The boys were totally fine. Sick as a dog. So she spent the entire weekend laid out in bed, sick as a dog, could hardly function. So if you're going to ask how the weekend was in Florida, it wasn't good. It was not ideal. Ended up spending a bunch of money, hardly even saw the wife. That's where I was. Oracle Jarhead. I'm trying to understand why the system wants Dome if the polls clearly show she ranks lower than President Poopy Pants in a head-to-head matchup against Trump. Okay, we can begin, I guess, with some, I told you I'm not going to do 3 hours on it, I can't, some of the latest drama when it comes to Biden. First, the press is starting to press. See what I did there? What, Chris? That's funny. Anyway, the press is starting to press.
Because I do take offense to what Ed alluded to. You know, come out here, every day there's a press briefing, and we do our best to give you the information that we have at the time. That's what we do. And we understand that the freedom of the press.
She's offended. Why is she offended? Because the media is starting to act like a media.
Eight times, or at least once, in regards to the president specifically.
Hold on a second.
That much you should be able to answer by this point.
Ed, please, a little respect here. So I am telling you that he has seen a neurologist 3 times while he has been in this presidency, right? So that is answering that question.
No, it's not.
No, it is. It is. You're
Dr.
asking
Kevin
me.
Kennard, come I to cannot, the White House.
But I also said to you, for security reasons, we cannot share names.
Others he would have met with.
You get the idea. The media is starting to act like a media. Now, I do need to remind everybody, don't you dare give them an ounce of credit. All these same people have been over backwards and forwards for years to cover for Joe Biden's condition. They're only now acting like a media now because they're worried about losing the election to Trump. So they're trying to run Joe Biden out of the race. So the media doesn't deserve any credit at all. But the White House has confirmed that Joe Biden is being evaluated constantly by a doctor whose specialty is Parkinson's disease. Joe Biden is being routinely looked at by a doctor who specializes in Parkinson's. Here's Dr. Tom Pitts.
You noticed anything that gives you a red flag as a doctor?
Oh, yeah. I see him 20 times a day in clinic. I mean, it's ironic because he has just such classic features of neurodegeneration. I mean, word finding difficulties, and that's not, I couldn't find the word. That's from degeneration of the word retrieval area.
He's also overcome stuttering, though. Could that be part of that, too?
No, this is not a palatal issue or a speech discrepancy, which is very different from a lemino dysfunction, actual word retrieval, where you pick a similar question or talk around the issue, plus the rigidity, monotone voice.
Wait, go back to that, the rigidity. What do you mean?
Rigidity, loss of arm swing, standing up lordotically. You notice when he turns, it's kind of end block turning. It's not a quick turn. That's one of the hallmarks of Parkinson's is rigidity and bradykinesia, slow movement. And he has that hallmark, especially with the low voice that said was a cold, hypophonia, a small monotone voice like this over time is a hallmark of Parkinsonism. I could have diagnosed him from across the mall.
Let me ask you a demo.
What's that he said about a small monotone voice being a sign?
Elections are about the future, not the past. Can you serve effectively for the next 4 years?
George, I'm the guy that put NATO together, the future. No one thought I could expand it. I'm the guy that shut Putin down.
Yeah, so I guess it's time we should have a little palace drama, palace intrigue update, huh? We'll do that next.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.